Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Welcome to another edition of Monday Night Lights, and I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we have one of the finest shows that I've ever been part of in my brief stint here so far with the NFL Draft Bible. Lucky enough this weekend, spent the entire weekend up in Canton, Ohio, covering the Hall of Fame festivities to the enshrinement dinner Friday night to the enshrinement on Saturday night to the Sunday game table where the players from this year's enshrinement sit around and just kind of shoot the breeze nonchalantly. Andrea Kramer was the host of that event. And then also covered the game between the Buffalo Bills and Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans went on to win 21-18. Over the weekend, spoke with a ton of guys. I look forward to bringing all these interviews to you guys out there. A lot of nice interviews, touched base with a lot of people. And the first guy I want to showcase on tonight's show is new ESPN correspondent, formerly of the NFL Network, Adam Schefter. He has a new book out, The Class of Football. It's a fantastic book. It's kind of the he edits down the enshrinement speeches of all the enshrined Hall of Famers. It's a nice little piece. It's a nice reference. I know I used it. I walked around the Hall of Fame, and it was something, you know, if you saw Paul Krause, you could get a couple little extra tidbits out of it, an Emmett Thomas, a Paul Krause. Guys like that, it gave a little bit more life to the interview when we spoke. But this is Adam's book out, and you can find that on the shelves. And here's Adam Schefter.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the NFL Draft Bible, and we're here with a man who's established the identity of being the eyes and ears of the NFL, Adam Schefter. Adam, you're here at Hall of Fame weekend, and you have a new book that has come out, The Class of Football, words, from the gridiron?
Hard-earned words of wisdom from the gridiron, from the legends of the gridiron, yep.
And what inspired you to have this book?
You know, Bo, what happened was 2 years ago, I was here at the induction ceremony, and Michael Irvin gave one of the great all-time speeches. I just thought it was tremendous. And I went to bed that night, and I got up at 4 in the morning, and went, oh my God, there are 250 men in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They've all given these great speeches. They've all said something that was inspirational and motivational. Why not see if the great people at the Pro Football Hall of Fame have the transcripts of the speeches? And sure enough, they did. And not only were there those speeches, but there were the speeches of the presenters. And I just put them all together in one book. And it's not like I wrote anything. It's all the words of everybody else. And this country loves motivational books. It loves its football heroes. This is a marriage of both that gives you the greatest life lessons that a person can learn.
And I know covering the Hall of Fame this weekend myself, I know this has been a ideal little book to have.
Yeah.
In reference to, you know, hey, I want to get some more insight about Emmett Thomas, you know, so I'm not going to be able to go back and get a transcript and, you know, watch the film and everything. So I break through this, I get the nice take on Emmett Thomas, and then you have something nice to talk about him, something to share.
Yeah, there are little factoids within each guy, and there's sort of a growth of the game. You can see the history of the game evolve through the years as the speeches are given, because you know that a speech goes in 63 or 1971 or 1983. You can see how the game has grown in popularity and size. But again, I come back to the fact that I just hope that every kid who plays Pop Warner sports, high school sports, college sports gets the chance to read this, because I really believe there are things in here that can help them improve, not only as a player, but as a person. I mean, these are the lessons that these men used to separate themselves from the pack and make them the Hall of Famers that they are.
Yeah, and reading through each bio from each player, I mean, each one is an inspirational, like you said, a testament to how they achieved the great success that they had. They talk about family, friends, you know, some report, you know, to the, you know, the Lord, the deep friendships. And, this book, when was it released? It
came out about 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago? Okay, I remember, I thought it was the third first, so, I mean, what's the reception?
Well, you know, so far there have been reviews on Amazon, and the reviews have been very favorable, and there have been people who have come through, and everyone who has gotten it seems to like it. I just hope the message gets out, like I said, that there are so many valuable lessons for so many people who could use them, and I hope people give it a chance, because to me, I love doing this project, and again, I think a lot of people could learn some things from it.
Excellent. And we're speaking with Adam Scheffner. Now ESPN, is that official?
I started at ESPN on Monday night, August 17th, so I'm very excited to get back to work, Bo.
Yeah, I bet you are. We miss seeing you out there. I know there's a lot of questions. Where's Adam? What happened to Adam?
I'm going to ESPN, and you know what? It was a situation where I had a great time on NFL Network, and I love working there, and I wish him the best, and really enjoy my time there, but I'm really excited about starting this new job at ESPN.
And speaking of working at the NFL Network, you obviously worked alongside with in this weekend's inductee, Rod Woodson.
Yeah.
Any fun story or caring story, something special about Rod?
Rod's an old-school kind of guy. I mean, he's a real throwback. And first of all, he's a true quality person, a great man. And as good as he was as a player, he's even that much better as a person. And aside from that, the one thing that blows me away is that Rod is just ripped up muscle, so well built, and he... He can eat anything he wants. I mean, he eats candy bars all the time and whatever. I mean, just he's a garbage disposal, and he's thin as a washboard and cut up and ripped, and it's like, how does that happen? How does one person get that lucky that they can eat whatever they want and keep the figure that he does? That's hey, I envy the man for that.
And obviously, you got started. You spent, I think, 15 years covering the Denver Broncos, something close
I covered the Broncos for just over 15 years, and it worked out very well. It was a great experience, and then went to NFL Network for about 5 years, and now, again, started ESPN on August 17th.
Yeah, so your time in Denver, you probably got to see Derek Thomas.
They played a highlight video of Derek Thomas on Friday night, and I was joking with some of the Chiefs officials last night after the dinner that I think most of those sacks came against John Elway and the Denver Broncos. There were so many times where I saw Derek Thomas whip around the edge and destroy and blow up John Elway. And that was the reason that the Broncos traded for Gary Zimmerman and gave him the contract he did. And Gary Zimmerman even said to me last night, he said, I think that I owe Derek Thomas a portion of my contract because I would not have been paid as much money as I was were it not for Derek Thomas wreaking havoc with John Elway.
Excellent. And when you come to a Hall of Fame enshrinement like this, is there anybody that look to?
To me, it's the unofficial kickoff of the season. And I just love coming here because that means football is here. It's the season starting. We're getting it underway. We're kicking it off. It's all going to happen. And when the Hall of Fame game is played and the induction ceremony goes on Saturday night, that tells you that it's time for football.
Yeah, and it's time for football. Any thoughts on like the Michael Vick situation? Do you think he's going to be in the NFL?
I would hope that he would be. I think he served his time, and I think he deserves a chance. I know what he did was heinous and egregious and all those things, and he served his time, and I think he deserves a chance, but it has not been easy to come by. And I do believe he'll wind up back in the league. I don't know where, I don't know when, but I do think somebody at some point should and needs to give him a chance.
And how about the Buffalo Bills? I mean, do you think that's going to be a boom or bust situation with Buffalo?
They have some really good talent, but what I have a question about with Buffalo is its offensive line. I mean, they have nobody in the position that they were in last year starting again. So it's an entirely remade offensive line, and if J.P. Lossman doesn't have the time, then Terrell Owens isn't going to get the ball, and then no one's going to be happy. So that's what I want to see in Buffalo, how the Bills' offensive line holds up.
Excellent. And, you know, in watching you on NFL Network, I have to ask, just personally, see you on that BlackBerry. I mean, does the news just fluctuate?
I can tell you this. You know, free agency, draft, certain times of the year, the thing is blown up. I mean, I get a hole in my pocket. It's vibrating. And now that I have Twitter, and I'm on Twitter.
It's
like nonstop. I'm on this thing all the time, just sifting through all the tweets that come in, and the tweets that are sent to me, and the tweets elsewhere. And it's just my toy, and I love it, and my wife hates it.
Yeah. Well, I think that being a man in your position and having the access that you have, you must be emailed, Twitter, texted.
I'm a big text guy. I love that. You know what? I found that a lot of teams around the league, the people, the officials on this, they like text because we don't have to have some long, drawn-out conversation. It's just plain simple. Are you signing this guy? Yes. Do you make a move on this guy? No. Did you trade for that guy? No. Did you train for that guy? Yes. And boom, you have your answers.
Excellent. And we're here once again joined with Adam Scheffner, the Hall of Fame enshrinement weekend, and he has a new book out, The Class of Football. And Adam, we just want to thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, Bo, thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. And like I said, I hope everybody gets a chance to read The Class of Football. I think it's I'm very proud of the whole thing.
You should be. It's a terrific book.
Thank you very much, Bo.
And that was Adam Scheffner. Like I said, a Hall of Fame weekend. He was there himself covering the event. And as you walk around the Hall of Fame that weekend, every corner you turn around, there might be a new NFL face. Roger Goodell, Troy Aikman, the list goes on and on. You really weren't sure who you were going to come across. There was a lot of media access. They had a lot of time. And while I was actually sitting down writing a piece for the NFL Draft Bible about the game day roundtable luncheon, Carl Peterson, the former GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, came into the media room to get his brother some media creds for the evening. And Carl was nice enough. He joined us, and he touched base a little bit about Derek Thomas and what he meant to the Kansas City Chiefs.
That, but this is the first time I've spent the entire weekend here, and you know, very privileged to present Derek. But geez, including the parade, which was just a knockout, you know. Anyway, we've had a great time, and Derek's family is all here, and I know how much fun they've had, and you know, it's a great celebration. That's what it is.
I mean, and you were you're known for taking over the Chiefs in 1989. Last season was your last year, but I mean, you brought the Chiefs back from the dead. I mean, you turned them into a winner. I think the Chiefs had one of the highest winning percentages of the 1990s. That can be attributed to you making those key decisions. Looking back, I mean, reflecting on your time with the Chiefs, obviously Derek Thomas being enshrined, what are some of your other standout memories there?
Well, it begins with him. He, you know, he was the cornerstone of the success we had in the 90s. And you never know about your first-round pick. We felt awfully good that we had a chance to take him in the fourth pick. And he did everything and beyond what we had hoped for. We had some fine coaches in Marty, Bill Cowher, Dr. Cunningham. It was exciting and fun to, as you say, to frankly rebuild the pride of the Chiefs, where I think the finest owner in the National Football League, the late Lamar Hunt, that was the goal for me. And you know, this year it's too bad he can't be here also, because I know he would have been so thrilled about not only Derek getting in, another Chiefs player in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but his dear friend Ralph Wilson. And on the 50th anniversary of the AFL.
And the AFL.
Yeah.
I mean, when you drafted Derek, you commented that you really never know what these guys are going to do no matter when they're drafted. But being a top high selection, I mean, when was the first moment? What was the earliest indication once he became a Kansas City Chief that you knew you had the real deal?
Well, I was fortunate enough to see him play as a senior at Alabama against Auburn in Birmingham in November of 88. And I didn't know at that time I was going to be the president GM of the Chiefs. But he was a standout then. I mean, he just lit it up. You know, he was what I said last night. He was a game changer. He's just on a defensive side of the ball. He just could do some spectacular things, creating turnovers, and the momentum just swings dramatically that, you know, you don't know to that extent, but he played in his, you know, his very first game with the Chiefs. I mean, it was obvious. It wasn't too big for him. He had a marvelous rookie season, the defensive rookie of the year, and then it just went up from there. And then, like I said, the other part of it that I needed from him, because we needed to reconnect with the community, was for him to get involved, and he did that completely, and Third and Long Foundation. Anyway, you know, special young man, and we ended up having a special relationship, and culminated last night with the induction.
And as you come to a close, what are your plans this upcoming season? I mean, are you missing the routine of it all?
Well, I'm not missing training camp, very frankly, which I attended every year. But I know when the games begin, I will. I'm, you know, I've taken over, and you don't replace a guy like Jack Kemp, but I'm the chairman of USA Football, the governing body that oversees all of youth football in America. And the commissioner had asked me to do this along with the new executive director of the NFLPA, Damaris Smith. It's something I've always had a passion for, and so we're going to try to continue to do the good works of that and grow youth football in America. And, you know, beyond that, we'll see what happens. I'm not right now actively looking for anything, just enjoying a little downtime.
Excellent. Mr. Peterson, just want to thank you for taking some time with us today.
That was Carl Peterson, former GM of the Kansas City Chiefs. He reflected on his time with the with Derek Thomas, who was enshrined this weekend. Sunday night after the game, went to the Titans locker room and got a really good sound bite with Lindell White and Chris Johnson. They seem like they really enjoy each other's company, and they seem like a real nice vibe inside the Titans locker room. They seem like a team that is very relaxed, very focused. And here's Linda White.
Lindell, you're looking great, man. How you feeling?
I feel amazing, man. I feel good. Start of the season, it was a great start to a season. You know, we have some keys that we need to work out. We're going to get in the film room, execute on the things we need to execute. Stay on sides. Stay off sides. Whatever we got to do, make sure we cut out the small penalties, especially the penalties that we can control. You know, so I think once we do that, everything's going to be all right. Jeff puts us in a great situation to win every day, so it's up to us to execute the game plan.
So what led you to the big change? I mean, what brought that on?
The big change is me trying to be the best football player I could be. You know, I wanted to be a better Lindell White. You know, I didn't want to be one of these guys that said, yeah, Lindell always had the potential, but, you know, they say I had the potential, but if he lose weight, so now Lindell has potential and he's lost weight. Now let's see. You know what I mean? Hopefully everything will work out for the best.
And how do you feel? I mean, how's that transformed over, you know, onto the field?
I feel amazing, man. My whole body, it's 100% different. I wake up in the morning, I was telling my, you know, Chris and him, that when I wake up in the morning and I step out of my bed, I feel a difference, you know. When I'm walking upstairs and my whole overall morale of my life and the way I feel, man, it's just, I feel good, man. I feel good. I'm happy that I made the switch and God is great. Yeah.
Excellent. Lindell, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Chris feels offensive.
Nah. Lindell White and Chris Johnson were, you know, they were locker roomed up against each other. And like I said, after I got done talking to Lindell, I shouted over to Chris Johnson's side.
I'm speaking with Chris Johnson here. Obviously, how'd the night go for you?
I think the night went real well. Starting off in the first series, we had a couple of not good runs, but as we got to the second series, we started to get a little daylight. So just as far as when I was in the game and the first offensive lineman was in the game, we had two series, and sometimes in the game it takes more than two series to get the running game going. But I just feel as a whole offense that we went out there and we showed teams a small glimpse of what this offense could be this year.
And, well, I mean, going in this, you know, they talk, so maybe talk about a sophomore. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you feel? I mean, did you ever think about that? Like, you know, if the success isn't there?
Man, not at all. I feel last year will probably be my worst year.
Yeah.
To be honest, I feel last year will be my worst year. So I don't really think about a sophomore.
That's
snow.
A fantastic way to
and
think.
Just by me being out there today and seeing how I'm feeling and how the offense was going and how the second series, how stuff starting to open up, I feel I have a great year this year.
And looking at your teammate over here, Lindell White, what was your reaction? I mean, you guys staying tough enough? Did you guys stay in touch enough where you didn't notice the weight loss, or was it a shock when you saw it?
Oh, well, when I first left after the season, I didn't come back for off-season workouts. And eventually when I did come back, it was a while before I seen him. And then when I seen him, I noticed the weight loss. I was like, where's Lindell at? But, yeah.
You think he's trying to take the speed guy's job?
Lindell, he's just going to be a good all-around back this year.
So, I mean, what's it like for both of you guys? I mean, you guys close? I mean, locker room, say you guys stay pretty tight?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the best friends on the team, you know what I'm saying? We do everything together, you know what I'm saying?
Excellent. I mean, so what's the last one trip you guys had?
Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis. That's about a month ago.
What you guys do? Anything fun?
We were hanging out with D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart.
Okay.
You know, the fraud from the Smash and Dash. We hung out with him and just, you know, chilled. That's about it. We hang out, you know, that's the trips out of town, but as far as in-state, we're with each other every day.
Excellent. I mean, you guys competitive? You guys doing anything?
We compete in everything we do. Who can dress better?
Who has better?
A smile?
Who dresses better?
Yeah, come on.
Of course,
stop.
Me. Come on now.
Of course.
Can I ask your teammate?
Huh?
Ask your teammate. Who dresses better? Chris Johnson or Lindell White?
Can we go 50-50 time?
No, it's no 50-50.
You gotta go. I gotta play with both of them, so I don't want nobody mad at me.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
Anybody? Who dresses better, Chris Johnson or Lindell?
Whoever wears patent leather belt don't match their shoes.
That doesn't matter.
These are both my running backs, so they both dress good. I can't do that.
Can anybody step up and say who dresses better?
Chris Davis.
Chris Davis.
Davis.
You know why?
Hold on.
I'm not going to do you. But you're going to know why I dress the best?
Why?
Because before Lindell lost his weight, he wasn't able to wear small clothes. He used to wear baggy clothes. I'm gone.
Gucci makes every size available. When you can afford a custom Gucci, they make anything you want.
That could be one of my favorite interviews I've done here for the NFL Draft Bible. You're listening to the Monday Night Lights powered by All Access Football. I'm your host, Bo Marchant. And you're listening to all the Hall of Fame weekend editions, and this is our piece with Javon Kearse.
How you doing tonight, Javon?
Feeling pretty good.
I was at the Shrimon dinner, and they were talking about Randall McDaniel and him walking around with the big bags of ice. So this is how it is right now.
That's crazy.
That's my jersey.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Okay.
That's a Fisher. She's a Gator.
You gotta be a Gator, right?
Okay, what was that now?
No, I was just asking. I said Randall McDaniel was mentioning, during his playing career, it went from carrying the bags of ice to being submerged in the ice pool, only to maybe put his hand out to get a cup of coffee. I mean, is that where you're at right now sometimes?
No, I'm not quite there yet. Like, this is just a precautionary thing, because I got my knee cleaned up like 3 months ago, and now it's just all about make sure I'm swole up after this stuff.
And how you feeling right now?
Feeling pretty good. I'm feeling like close to my 99 self. I mean, I didn't do any of the mini camps.
Yeah.
So, I'm feeling real fresh right now because I didn't have that work, but I got to work in then training camp. So I feel like I'm about ready to have a pretty good season.
I mean, and you were an icon in Tennessee prior to you going up to Philadelphia first. You came back. I mean, with the absence of Albert Haynesworth, do you take it on upon yourself to maybe be the leader of the defense?
Yeah, I mean, we take it on as motivation because, people count us out now since we lost one guy along the line. I mean, Albert's a beast. Don't get me wrong. He does his thing, but, this is a team sport. We got three more guys on the defensive line who does a pretty good job, and we're just going to have to not talk about it, but when the season gets going, we're going to show people that, we are still a pretty damn good defensive line.
Excellent. And I saw the girl showed you that Gator sweatshirt, and I know it got you excited. I mean, is this going to be a repeat season for Gator Nation?
Heck yeah. We got Super Tebow back there, man. Urban Meyer, he does his thing. He's got a new contract, so that's more incentive for him to make him get another national.
You think Tebow should have won the Heisman last year?
I don't know. I mean, you know what? I'm proud of them with the overall achievement, with the team achievement, with the national. I mean, Tebow has him. He has him a Heisman trophy. So, but with two national championships, so I'm pulling for him to win the big one. I don't care about him winning the little personal.
You get back down to Florida at all the Santa games you can?
Not much, but I do talk to a couple of players here and there. And whenever they come up to Nashville, like last year when they played Vanderbilt, I stopped by the team hotel, talked to some of the guys, and they were ready. They went out there and did their thing against Vanderbilt.
Excellent, Javon. Thanks for joining us.
Now it's Javon Kearse, and I referenced to Randall McDaniel when Javon walked out of the locker room last night. He had giant bags of ice wrapped around each knee, and during the round table luncheon of the Hall of Famers, Randall McDaniel expressed how when he started, might be an ice bag on the shoulder and some ice on his knees and ice here or there. Eventually, he just got away from the ice, and then when he would come in for therapy or training to get healed up, he would just submerge himself in the ice tub, and there was no more bags. He would just sit in the ice tub, and he said the only time he would get out was to move his hand for a sip of a hot cup of coffee. And like I said, Javon said he was healthy. It was just a precautionary thing because he had surgery a few months ago. But he said he feels like the 99 Javon Kearse. So something to look forward to. And another guy we touched base with was Jason Longconfort. He's the new NFL Network Around the League guy. He's the guy that's kind of giving the breaking news. And me and him spoke yesterday. And here's Jason.
We're here at the NFL Draft Bible on location at the Hall of Fame in Shrimon Weekend, and we're on the field as the Titans practice with the new man of Around the League for the NFL Network, Jason Longconfort. Jason, how you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
I'm excellent. As you just mentioned prior to this going live, this is the kickoff to the football season. Looking at these teams tonight, what do you expect from the Buffalo Bills with T.O.?
Boy, anytime the teams have five preseason games, it makes the first couple even maybe a little more monotonous in terms of really trying to get a read on anything in terms of first team stuff, I don't think we'll see either team's starters go more than two series. I'm sure they're going to try to get the ball in T.O.'s hands. It'll make sense. He's a guy who always likes to be established early in games anyway. That's a pretty good way to keep him from pouting. So I think he'll have a chance to connect with Trent. And then on the other side, I'm most interested to see Vince Young and also Patrick Ramsey, because I just talking to some people, I wouldn't be stunned if there's more of a competition that ends up going on for that number two spot than maybe some imagine.
Yeah, I mean, leading that down the road, I mean, would the Titans be inclined to maybe try to move Vince Young, or is there any value or any way that they even could do something like that?
No, I would be pretty surprised. I mean, it would just really, considering what they've already invested in him, the fact that if you traded him now, really haven't seen the guy do nothing in a full season, you're not going to get much trade value. I mean, he's someone who needs to have a big preseason no matter what, whether, you know, he wants to be here or not be here, or what you believe about what he said at various times. I don't think they would trade him now. I mean, he's still a guy, you know, who's an asset long-term, potentially, someone they need to continue to cultivate, someone they've invested a lot in. But, you know, we've seen with Coach Fisher's move to Collins, sometimes you have to do what makes the most sense right now. And who knows, 4 weeks from now, they could decide that in a pinch, if our starter goes down, the guy to help us get through that particular game, maybe it's Patrick Ramsey and not Vince Young.
Yeah, you know, and off the top of the head, that remains because when they traded their backup to San Diego, remember that a couple years ago? I'm trying to think. Who was your disgruntled backup in Tennessee?
Oh, well, Volek. They had some issues with Philly Volek at one point.
Volek,
yeah.
Remember they got rid of him right before the start of the season. And that was kind of a shocking movement that they were so close.
Yeah, and I can remember the Chargers trading Cleo Lemon a few years ago as a backup, and Marty Schottenheimer being a little upset about that. You know, that A.J. Smith did that. It's not unprecedented. It can happen. But really, this is a good time to kind of reestablish some market value. And a guy like Vince, it's not a whole lot of people real high on him right now.
What are you hearing about Michael Vick? I mean, is UFL an option right now? I mean, are you?
I know he doesn't want to play there. I mean, as a last resort, perhaps, but it's a long time before those games start. You know, we're still a couple months away. I've heard that two or three teams have had serious internal discussions about him, that at least one team has had some communication with his agent. But at this point, no one obviously has made the move. I mean, more guys will continue to be injured. More young quarterbacks will falter. Teams are constantly reassessing. I still think New England could be a possibility. Yeah, they signed Andrew Walter. They looked at Cleo Lemon. But sometimes you sign guys to cut them. And, you know, you're talking a one-year vet minimum contract in the preseason. It's not costing you anything. So, you know, I think as people continue to make evaluations about quarterbacks around the league, he's someone who's going to come up in personnel meetings. And I think there's too many smart people in this league to think that he's not one of the 64 best quarterbacking candidates in the country. You know, 32, okay, you say he's not a starter, that's fine. I mean, I still think once he gets back to speed, he's somewhere 25 to 32. But regardless, he's someone who has won games in this league and has a tremendous skill set. And it's not quite been given the all clear, but has been given, some pretty good backing by the league in terms of his conditional reinstatement. So I think it's a matter of time, and it could take several more weeks. I didn't think it would happen quickly anyway.
Okay.
And he's someone who's still getting himself into shape as well. So I think 2 to 3 weeks from now, he'll be a little better, in better football shape. We'll have thrown more passes. We'll have built up the shoulder, the rotator cuff, all that stuff. It'll play out.
Do you think this is any of a PR? Teams are it's not so much the talent. I mean, the team's still solid in his talent, his skill set, or is it the PR that they're kind of dreading in the signing of Michael?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I mean, it's the fact that it's a position where, above all others, you want to have someone in your system as long as possible. So it's late for quarterbacks.
Okay.
It's a time of the year where teams are pretty much like their rosters. They've made a lot of their moves. They want to see their own guys first. And you're right, there is a PR aspect to it, too. And just as the commissioner basically said, hey, this is conditional, every day this guy has to walk a straight line or things can deviate. Well, I think teams are waiting, too. I mean, what's the sense of diving in right now? Let's play a few games. You know, this is a guy who couldn't play in the first
last couple of preseason games anyway. He's going to need time to get up to speed. And let's see if he does stay out of trouble for even, you know, a month or 2 months. As he, look, this guy hasn't had any kind of freedom in a long time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. So, you know, I think he's got to just figure some things out in terms of what his day-to-day regimen is going to be like now that he doesn't have any authority imposing a schedule on him.
And how about a guy like Brett Favre? I mean, is that saga over with? Or?
I'd never close the door on that one until he slams it shut. You know, I still feel like he's throwing balls for a reason.
I mean, if he just doesn't want to go to camp, maybe?
Well, I think part of it is he feels like there's only so many throws left in that arm, and he'd rather save them up. Like he even said, if somebody calls in November or later, you know, I see a lot of similarities between him and what Roger Clemens did at the tail end of his career in terms of, you know, coming in with the Astros or the Yankees after the All-Star break, prorated contract, chance to kind of help a team make a push. So if someone, you know, has a need at quarterback and they're in the hunt and they suffer an injury or just want, you know, feel like he's a better move, I can't entirely rule it out. And yeah, I think part of it too is, you know, the whole idea of a grueling training camp and 2 days and all that. It's probably part of the reason why he clearly said he's still going to throw football and he's going to throw the football around and he still loves football. And, you know, maybe things will change over time. I think that's why, because if he feels like in November, my shoulder is pretty strong and there's a pretty good fit out there and one more half season, go out in the blaze of glory, get a team into the playoffs. It's kind of what he's all about.
Yes, and we're here with Jason Lockenfora here on the NFL Draft Bible. Jason, looking at some of the upcoming rookies that are still unsigned, do you see any that are going to kind of really take its toll and last deep into
As we talk right now, the Bengals and Andre Smith, there's really no communication at all there. They haven't even really talked since Monday as of this afternoon, so that's almost a week. You know, way someone described the Packers, DJ Raji situation to me was there's absolutely no momentum. They can't really get anything going. There's a chasm there. And the Jags and Eugene Monroe, as of this morning, were at an impasse. So I think some teams, you know, are trying to get certain players maybe a little bit below where they think the normal slotting would be. And I think in the other cases of like a Crabtree, it's someone trying to hit a home run and go outside the slot. And some of that stagnation has probably bled over into a few other contracts. But, you know,
what do you believe about Crabtree and the saying that he was
not going to? I can't imagine that happening. I think Eugene Parker is way too smart for that. I don't think it would really help his situation. It wouldn't help the team. It wouldn't help his reputation. It wouldn't help his stock going in the next draft. And the bottom line is he would be walking away from the opportunity to pocket, you know, 20 to 25 million guaranteed right now in the present. You know,
okay.
And if you're really dead set on 35 and you want to get more than Hayward Bay, well, that's great. But at a certain point, you realize we're in a down economy. I'm not going to gain any more leverage the longer, you know, by sitting out. I'm not going to be able to come in and hit those incentives any better if I'm out of camp for 1 month, 2 months, whatever. So I really think at the end of the day, he'll come to his senses and they'll get a deal done. And the way I think it'll come out is you'll see some of the max numbers being big, but it'll be bloated on the back end with some of these, you know, sort of like the Hayward Bay deal where there's $5 to $6 million in there. That's Super Bowl MVP and league MVP bonuses.
Okay, so
maybe he'll hit those. Chances are not with Oakland. I mean, at least the way it looks right now. So, I think there's resolutions to be had, but a couple of these could bleed into the regular season. I wouldn't be surprised if one or two bleed into the regular season. Any more than that would be unusual.
And, I mean, obviously, you being the inside man for the NFL Network, you take everybody around the league right now. Take us into that. You used to be a writer for the Washington Post, for the Redskins, big beat writer for the Skins. And I mean, how did this all come about where you're now the face and voice of the NFL on the NFL Network?
It's pretty crazy. I know. My head is still spinning. It's pretty unreal. I got approached about the opportunity, and the more I kind of found out about it, the more sense it made. And really, I'm just humble and thankful that these guys, you know, thought that I was up to this challenge, and it certainly is a challenge. And each day I just try to get, you know, meet more people and do better work and work, you know, work my tail off, because it's a lot to get your arms around, 32 teams and 32 coaching staffs and 32 front offices. But it's a tremendous challenge. It's a lot of fun, and it keeps you on your toes. So it's good stuff.
So I mean, what's your biggest hurdle right now? I mean, what makes you the most nervous in your?
It's not really anything that makes you nervous. It's just that every day you know that you've got to work your tail off to keep your head above water.
Okay.
You know, so it's just the reality of how competitive it is covering this league, and there's so many entities that follow the NFL. And I mean, whether I work for the NFL Network or not, I don't think it's a stretch to say this is by far the most dominant sport in our country.
Yeah.
So that there's so much, such rabid fan bases all over the country. People are interested in football through fantasy football. So you've got people who love their teams, they love certain players. There's just a constant, you know, desire for NFL information, and I just bust my tail and try to provide some. And yeah, just continue to meet people around the league and branch out. It's really at the end of the day a people business. So the more people, you know, you get to come in contact as you, you know, do this job longer, you know, the more they earn your trust and you earn their trust, and it's really about building relationships.
I mean, prior to you coming to the NFL Network, was there, your contact list? I mean, was there some magical book thrown your way saying, oh, here's...
No, I wish. If it's out there, somebody get it to me.
No,
it's just humping, you know, it's making a lot of calls, sometimes cold calls, and connecting with people you hadn't talked to in a while, and I don't know that there's any magic formula or one way to do it, but I do know that it really is about just getting to know more people, being out there, letting them know they can trust you, you know, earning people's respect. So I think, you know, the way I've just always figured you do that is just by working hard, being accountable, being fair, being accurate. You know, that's sort of the hallmark. So that's what you shoot for.
Excellent. And getting back to the football side of things, a team that I'm interested in hearing your opinion on is like the Indianapolis Colts with the change, you know, Jim Caldwell from Tony Dungy, the loss of the offensive defensive coordinator. And I mean, I think last season they did struggle opening up the season.
Yeah.
Some said that was due to Peyton Manning covering his knee.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have 9 straight seasons of playoff runs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is the end in sight for this team to start with that downward slide? I mean,
can you go 15 years and win 10, 11 games a year? Probably not. I mean, I tell you, though, Bill Polian's pretty good.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
I mean, he may be the best. And to me, the strength of your front office and having a strong quarterback allows you to overcome a lot. And I think the other thing people overlooked last year, too, was Jeff Saturday is really the central nervous system of that offense. I mean, yeah, it's Peyton, but Saturday is an extension of him. He's vital. You know, he wasn't right health-wise the first half of the year. So you don't have Manning right, you don't have Saturday right, and you got Marvin Harrison, you know, probably at the end. That's a lot to overcome. Like you said, Caldwell is kind of an open book here. We don't really know. I mean, he doesn't have he's been a head coach at the college level, but you don't know. I mean, it's big shoes to fill, Tony Dungy. But the pieces are there for them to be competitive. They got to run the ball a little better. They got to stop the run. That's what they really need to get back to, because Peyton's going to help them win games. You know, they've got offensive weapons there. Excuse me. So I think they're certainly a team to contend with, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they made a long playoff run.
Excellent. And Jason, before we let you go here tonight, who's your early Super Bowl prediction? Because the season starts tonight.
I'm big on the Pats. I just
they are the best. I mean, I really think. I mean, even the 11-5 season without Brady. I mean, we'll never know. But I really believe if Brady's there and they're back in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have the outcome of last season that you have.
I think anytime a guy like Bill Belichick doesn't have to sort of create false motivation, it's there for you. That's a dangerous thing. I mean, 0-4 in the preseason, missed the playoffs. He doesn't have to sell that we're the underdogs or everybody's out to get us. I mean, he doesn't have to concoct any of that mental us against the world stuff. He can say, hey, look, we were losers last year. That's not acceptable. That's not who we are. You know, we let our quarterback get knocked out for the season in the first game. So I think there's plenty of motivation there. I think Tom Brady is a cool customer, but he's a cold-blooded assassin, too. And I think he wants to obviously come and let everybody know I'm over that thing. My knee's fine. I'm the best quarterback in the league again. And I think they have a lot of weapons there. I mean, some of the subtle things they did, I like. I mean, we'll see. Sometimes veterans break down. But I like Taylor. I like Galloway. I like Springs. I like Lee Bodden. I like, you know, a lot of depth they provided.
Now.
Yeah, Burgess, without having to give up a whole heck of a lot. It's guys who know how to play, guys who are smart, guys who know what a guy like Belichick's going to demand of them. I'm a big Pat. I think they're going to have a big season.
And in the NFC?
You know, some days I like the Giants. Some days I like the Falcons. I don't know. I don't know that I have a team to beat in the NFC, I think it's going to be like it generally has been. Kind of a situation where it's week 13 and there's still, you know, 9-10 teams in the playoff hunt. And I think they'll be continue to be clumped together closely. The Saints, to me, are an interesting team. I can see the Saints getting in as a wild card and maybe doing some things in the playoffs. To me, they're a team to watch. I think, again, Matt Ryan and the Falcons are only going to continue to ascend. And I think two teams will probably come out of the NFC East as well.
Okay. You know what? And one more thing before I let you go. I have one more because I wanted to ask you earlier. Do you see any of these receivers being traded? The Brandon Marshall, the Bolden, everything status quo?
Yeah, I would be really surprised. I mean, those teams have never initiated trade talks with those guys at all.
The other way around.
And even then, especially in the case of Bolden, they were getting calls at the draft, and they weren't making counteroffers. You know what I mean? It's like
they just didn't want
the intent really wasn't there. I mean, I've talked to several executives who had conversations with the Cardinals who said, you know, we'd make an offer, and then we'd make another offer, and then it's like, well, we're not going to bid against ourselves. You know what I mean? We're not. It was clear that they were never really looking to move him. I think Tom Condon will eventually get a deal done there, make an extension. But again, that's a difficult situation for the Cardinals because traditionally they haven't been a high revenue team. They have the new stadium, but we'll see what kind of if the attendance from the Super Bowl carries over. But they got Dockett who wants to get paid. They've got Dansby who's going to want to get paid. So I'm not sure they'll be able to keep everybody happy. Maybe Mr. Bidwell will. But I don't think there's any chance that they ever could really consider trading Bolden before this year. Maybe next year with 1 year left on it, if they decide to allocate the money differently, so be it. But and then with Marshall as well, tough time to trade him. Hasn't played in a while. He's got the hip injury, the off-field stuff. Obviously, he's looking for a payday. I think he's another one that's going to have to prove it on the field a little bit.
Okay. Jason, again, just thanks for joining us on the show. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was late Jason Lockenfora of the NFL Network joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible Monday Night Light Show powered by All Access Football. I'm your host, Beau Marchant. And like I said, we're touching base on things that all happened over in Tryman weekend. It was a big weekend. Ralph Wilson Jr., Bullet Bob Hayes, Derek Thomas, Rod Woodson, Bruce Smith, and Randall McDaniel were all enshrined. And when you walk around Canton and you mingle and touch base with these guys, you get a real sense of how much they really care about one another and the special fraternity that they joined. Each one of them echoed the same response that they wish more Hall of Fame guys, inductees, would return to Canton this special time of year to share in the festivities. And I thought it was special to take note of. I spoke with Thurman Thomas, and he mentioned how him and Michael Irvin really wanted to really start putting their foot down, and getting the ball, the wheels in motion to get these Hall of Fame induction guys back to Canton because it is a special time. And I also took note that these guys are the youngest generation of the guys enshrined, and they already have the sense and the knowledge that they should be bringing these veteran Hall of Fame guys back. Because when you see them, it's amazing. You turn left, there's Bart Starr. You turn right, there's John Madden. You look behind you, there's Dan Fouts and Bob Greasy. Fred Biletnikoff, Larry Wilson, Lance Allworth. It was the first time he was there in 30 years. And, the excitement, all of them said the same thing. Lance Allworth here. He hasn't been here in 30 years. A guy like Ron Mix, who played with Lance Allworth, it was probably a special occasion for him, blocking and playing offensive line all those years for the 1960 Chargers, having a teammate like Lance Allworth come back to Canton. And like this, the list went on and on. The Hall of Famers, I think they really, really enjoy this weekend. It's something, like I said, that you really feel the sense of the fraternity part of it and how special and how unique it is. I know there was a stat thrown out there. I think 20,960 players have played in an NFL game, and only 253 of those players have been enshrined in Canton, Ohio. And that's something to take note of. And also, this weekend, as I was watching the enshrinement, walking around, trying to collect as much information as we could, I took special note to Rod Woodson's speech. I enjoyed his speech, but it wasn't so much, the sentimental things he said, even though I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting how he started with Tony Dungy, saying that Tony Dungy should be enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And I can understand where he's coming from with Dungy, being an African-American coach, the first African-American coach, you know, to win a Super Bowl, and, you know, the things he's done off the field as well and the success on it. And I thought it was also interesting to note that he mentioned Dick LeBeau, you know, and he's, you know, Rod Woodson said, I don't care if he has to be enshrined as a contributor to the game, you know, with 50 years of experience and everything he's done, that LeBeau should be enshrined. And then when it came to Bill Cowher, he really didn't say that Bill should be enshrined. And if he did, I don't remember hearing it. I kind of reread the transcripts of it, and maybe I glossed over it. Now, I know he gave him credit and props for not putting him on the IR when he tore his ACL, and then he got to come back the same season and play in the Super Bowl for 15 plays. But that was the difference. I just took note of that. And when you're walking through the crowd or you're spending the weekend in Canton, you feel a very strong sense of the players who come to honor their teammates. I saw several Viking guys. You saw Cornelius Bennett. You saw Daryl Talley. And when you looked at Rod Woodson, there wasn't a real strong backing by the Steelers, or at least the Steeler organization. And I think most remember him most as a Steeler. And I wonder, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder, because, you know, Rod Woodson is such a standout player. I mean, 75th anniversary guy. I mean, this isn't some guy that you're going to question, oh, I don't know if he deserved the right to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is one of the Mac Daddies of all time. And I said, the fans showed up. Steeler Nation was in house. Steeler Nation had the terrible towels flowing when Rod Woodson was at the podium. But I didn't see a lot of Steeler, you know, yeah, you know, like I said, I mean, it's not like I could see everybody, but I saw almost everyone. And I didn't see any Steeler guys there kind of representing that type of, you know. And like I said, even the Hall of Fame, you know, I think maybe Joe Green showed up. But, I mean, for all the Hall of Fame guys, and the Steelers not maybe coming back for one of their own, I just kind of thought that was strange. I mean, I know the Packers had a ton of guys in. And, you know, they called in, and like I said, very, very strange. And we got a caller coming in on the show. Hello? Are you there? Hello? All right, we've got the boys calling in, but obviously can't hear them. And like I said, getting back to the Rod Woodson thing and the uniqueness of it, you know, take, for example, like Derek Thomas, Marty Schottenheimer was there, Carl Peterson was there, you know, to do the speech. You know, and Neil Smith was there, spoke with Neil Smith. You know, Emmett Thomas, chief. You know, I think Bobby Bell was there. You know, and same with Randall McDaniel. And the only guy that I came across, you know, and I'm sure Rod had friends and family, but the only player that I actually came across who was there, you know, because of Rod Woodson, was his Baltimore Raven teammate, Shannon Sharp, you know. And the first thing I asked Shannon was, Shannon, I know you're here for Rod. You know, and Shannon said, I wouldn't miss this for the world. You know, and he mentioned how tight him and Ray Lewis were. And, you know, but like I said, when you look at it and you kind of break down that speech and you really think about it, you know, I wonder how, you know, I don't know. Just it kind of makes you wonder. At least it makes me wonder. I mean, three other players were enshrined that day, or two other players, and, you know, a couple of them, like I said, had, you know, a few teammates, some ownership, a GM. I, off the top of my head, I can't even remember the old Vikings owner. I mean, he was there in attendance. And like I said, I mean, there was no Rooney's, at least that I saw. There was no Franco Harris's. There was no, you know, Kevin Green's. There was no Steeler support. Like I said, Steeler fans showed up. Can't fault the Steeler fans. Steeler Nation was there. You know, they gave a roaring, you know, applause when one of their own, you know, was inducted and they're on this, you know, the stage of Canton. And, you know, like I said, if you haven't been there, it's definitely something that you want to do. You want to make that a trip. This, you know, you go there in August when this enshrinement weekend happens, and it's one festivity after another. And it's kind of nice seeing, you know, besides the Super Bowl, this is one of the, you know, maybe the Pro Bowl as well. It's kind of a time where the whole world of football, at least the legends, of football, you know, are gathered in one place, and everywhere you turn, you know, like I said, you see one fantastic, you know, Hall of Famer after, you know, after the next. And we're getting some chat room information, and it says, did we talk fantasy football? And yes, yeah, we do talk fantasy football. We'll talk any football because we love football here at the NFL Draft Bible. I was wondering if you're the North boys that were just calling in. I saw that caller came in, but I actually couldn't get a response back there. And we got a caller calling in now. Hello, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And what's your name?
Matt.
Matt, what's your question, Matt?
Well, actually, tonight is actually our fantasy football draft, live draft. And I got everything good, but I'm not quite sure who to go for quarterback.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions?
Do you know what you're selecting? I mean, do you have a predetermined draft order? Is this, you find out when you get there?
Well, it's a live draft, so you actually, pick, you're on the clock and all that, you know?
Okay, so when's your first pick?
Fourth, but I'm actually going for a running back first round, and I'm going to go for my quarterback second round, but I'm not sure who to go for quarterback.
Okay. Well, I think the obvious choice is, if you get your hands on Tom Brady, you definitely want to go with Tom Brady. And a guy that I might catch a little slack here for, I think everyone loves Drew Brees, and then you got your Peyton Manning. But the guy that I really kind of like is the Philip Rivers. I think last season he really broke out. He had 36 touchdown passes that broke Dan Fouts' old mark. He threw for over 4,000 yards, and I think Vincent Jackson is becoming one of the real nice super sleepers, but he's not that elite status, but he's really coming into his own. And I think a pass heavy San Diego offense is a guy like a Phillip Rivers, I think, is a guy that you might even be able to wait till the third round to get, because
I actually had him in mind, but I wasn't quite sure. I think I am going to try to get him.
Yeah, like I said, because and the thing to remember is, when you look at San Diego, they're always going to put points on the board. He has, if all else fails with the receivers, he has one of the best tight ends in football, Antonio Gates. They have Darren Sproles coming out of the backfield, who's like a little rocket. And, how many times last season did you see Phillip Rivers drop back, find Darren Sproles on a little screen pass that went for 50, 60 yards? And then sometimes they end up with scores. So, like I said, I think Phillip Rivers is one of those elite guys, but he just doesn't get the same respect as a Manning, a Brady, or a Drew Brees. Answer your question, though?
Perfectly. And also a tight end. Last year I actually had John Carlson from Seattle Seahawks.
That turned out great for you, huh?
Yeah, he was a real good one. Do you think I should go for him again or what? Because he's kind of like nobody would think of him, but I did, and I picked him up, and he did great for me.
Yeah. I think you got to just let the draft come to you. I think you'll know when the time is right. Obviously, I think there might be better options out there. Obviously, if you can get a Jason Witten and Antonio Gates, guys in that class. But, if those guys are gone, I would recommend John Carlson. Another guy to look at might be Greg Olsen with Jay Cutler now in Chicago. That's a guy, obviously, I think his stock will be up a little bit more. But, Carlson or Greg Olsen are those nice, bottom of the second tier options. And does everyone have to use a tight end?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know what? I argue a lot of people with this, and I'm a big tight end guy. If you can get a solid tight end, because remember this, Matt, everybody's going to have a Tom Brady, or at least something close. And you're going to have Steven Jackson, and your buddy's going to have Matt Forte, and your other buddy's going to have Michael Turner, and the other guy's going to have Adrian Peterson, and you're going to have Roddy White and Chad Johnson, and this guy's going to have Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. And then it comes to tight ends. And that's where you're going to kind of make that separation. Because if you have a Jason Witten, if I have Jason Witten and you're playing with John Carlson, I kind of feel that I'm going to take you there. That's going to be one side for me. But like I said, don't slack on the tight end. I mean, Like I said, I mean, because you can find receivers late. I mean, you can get Vincent Jackson, Bernard Berrians. Those guys are going to be all around 1,000 yards. I mean, but that's the key. When you get that 1,000-yard tight end potential, that's something. Like I said, don't slack off on the tight end. And you know what? I want you calling me back. I'd actually like to see next week, call back in the show. I'd like to see who ended up with.
Yeah, all right. I'll definitely do that.
Excellent. Well, good luck tonight, man, drafting.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. That was Matt. Like I said, we're here talking fantasy football. We're talking Hall of Shrine the weekend. It's a great time. Football is on, man. Last night was the big kicker. There's nothing better than, you know, being on the sidelines, watching those guys crack it. Oh, it was awesome. You know, T.O., Buffalo fans love Terrell Owens. There is no question that city is in awe of T.O. Last night during the game, just T.O. T.O., I mean, he recognized him back a few times. He turned around, gave him the thumbs up, gave him some peace signs. He was very interactive with the fans. And like I said, you know, it's we all know T.O.'s thing. I mean, he comes in, he's super nice. You know, the teammates love him, but eventually it comes down to those games where he doesn't get the ball and everything kind of just starts to go south for some reason. I don't know why that happens, but like I said, it happened in San Francisco, it happened in Philadelphia, it happened in Dallas, and why wouldn't one think it's not going to happen in Buffalo? And you know, that's, like I said, I hope it doesn't happen. I mean, you know, for all I care, the Buffalo Bills could go on to win the Super Bowl. I mean, and, you know, Ralph Wilson could get a ring, and T.O. could get a ring, and Trent Edwards, yeah, you know, it's not a, you know, a hate on T.O. issue. It's a look at the past, but look at the future. And what does that, you know, when you're looking back to look forward, you see, hey, this guy has kind of been a cancer, the three teams. You know, what's to stop him from doing it again? Because we know, like I said, he's a prima donna. He wants the ball. It is about him. And, you know, and like I said, though, the fans are going to, you know, the fans build that fire. I mean, watching the fans last night, you know, they weren't chanting Marshawn Lynch. They weren't chanting Lee Evans. You know, Trent Edwards got a little bit of love. It was T.O. T.O. I mean, this is T.O.'s team now. I mean, you can just feel it. I mean, the fans were just, you know, the Buffalo fans were just loving him. Loving T.O. You know, on the other sideline, I think the talk was, you know, Vince Young got a lot of playing time last night. I didn't really think he looked all that well. You know, he threw the interception. I mean, he did have the touchdown pass, but, I mean, I remember standing there on the sidelines kind of just jotting down his stats. You know, I didn't look at his stats at the time, but it seemed like he was like 1-for-7 with a touchdown and a pick. You know, and I'm going to look at these stats right now. Yeah, first quarter. Yeah, they had the first quarter stats here, and they don't got the third quarter summary. Third quarter summary, he had, like I said, one attempt for 7 yards. Like I said, I'm trying to, I had some papers printed out. I was trying to check those out for you here. But like I said, Vince Young, I think he kind of struggled, and Jason Lockenfor, the NFL Network, mentioned that don't be surprised if this becomes a battle for the number two job between Vince Young and Patrick Ramsey. I know Patrick Ramsey, he didn't get as much time as Vince Young, but I think that's obvious because, you know, the Titans have a lot invested in Vince Young, and, you know, he still has a lot of potential out there. It's a matter of getting his head on straight. Talk to him a little bit in the locker room after the game. And he seemed very, you know, very grounded. You know, he was very polite. He was, you know, came across real well. It wasn't something where he seemed arrogant or, you know, not willing to, he didn't seem distant from the team or anything that was going on around him. So, you know, like I said, with all these guys, I mean, you want to wish all these guys the best. I mean, it is their livelihood. You know, you might root against them to lose. But like I said, I mean, a guy like Vince Young, I mean, you got to root for him. You don't want to, you know, root against him. You know, in terms of, you know, being able to make it and make a living in this game. Like I said, next week we got a ton of content. I can't tell you how many log minutes of interview I have. Lee Steinberg, Tony Dorsett, Jim Kelly, Rod Woodson, Bruce Smith, Paul Krause, Emmett Thomas, Thurman Thomas, Roger Goodell. You know, the list goes on. It's just a matter of got home late last night. Start adding the stuff up, and just wanted to make sure and listen to it so the sound was good. And, you know, like I said, Lee Steinberg, they had a music blasting when I was talking to him, but like I said, one of the finer agents, and just a man of wisdom and knowledge when you're talking to him. You know, he understands the game. He understands the CBA situation and, you know, what's it going to take for both sides to move on. And, you know, he says it well thought out. And like I said, real articulate man. And like I said, I want to listen to that and make sure it's usable, or I would have played it today because I was excited about getting that for you guys to listen to. Canton Hall of Fame football season is now full go. We are ready to roll with this. 2009 NFL season is now upon us. And something to take note of, I don't know if this is the first time, but the preseason, the first touchdown on that funky play, you got to wonder, you know, what's that going to lead to down the road as the Titans did the little goofy shoofy bringing that first touchdown in. That was kind of a wild one. I don't think people were expecting that. I'm your host, Beaumar Chant. This was another edition of Monday Night Lights, powered by All Access Football. Make sure you go to the NFL Draft Bible for the latest content, college and pro, where college and pro football meet.